Right. Hello and welcome to episode 18 of the RepticChat podcast, the one-stop shop for all things from snakes and lizards to bugs and birds. This is the UK's only, currently, multi-species exotic animal podcast that I know of. A few things to go over before I introduce today's guests. I am nearing 20 episodes already. Can you believe it? I certainly can't. I didn't think I'd get past five, and I'm pretty happy with how it's going. We've had lots of good response. Everyone that listens is always giving me some fantastic feedback. So yeah, it's going to go to 20 and then to 100 and then onwards from there, probably. See how it goes. If there is a specific species you would like to hear on the podcast, a keeper you think that would be good, or you're listening and you're thinking, I'd like to come on as a guest, drop me a comment down below, chuck me a DM on Instagram or just Instagram, and let me know, and we can try and make some cool stuff happen. Morph Market. It is currently up to date with all the cool stuff I have produced this year so far, most of which is now absolutely smashing food and is looking for a new home. I'm happy to courier everything all over the UK using Ridgeway Couriers, and animals can also be collected from me at the Ark Show in November. Also, go and join the RepticSquad Patreon with the link down below, and you can save yourself 10% on all Morph Market pricing. It is the top link in the show notes below. What's going on with the animals for me this week? I picked up a new adult female, a lovely pied female from Rocky Ridge Reptiles, and she is settling in quarantine at the moment, and she is going to end up part of my hypo albino pied project, which is a few years down the line, but hopefully next year I'll hit a pied. Because if you have been listening for a while or you've been following me on Instagram, you will know that this is year 5 of pairing het pieds and hoping to hit pieds and not even getting an egg from any het pieds, and I've got 4 of them. So next year, I've got a visual pied albino, I've got a visual hypo het pied, I've got 4 het pied girls, I've got visual pied girls, and I've got a visual albino pied girl who won't be ready next year. But if I don't hit pieds in the next couple of years, I'll just keep trying. But it's really frustrating. So yeah, that's that. Next weekend is egg cutting day for the final clutch of 2023 as well. They're in my incubator at the moment, unless I get any unexpected eggs. I don't think I'm going to, but there's a few girls that are still being a bit weird, so I'm not really 100% sure. But the pairing in the incubator was a butterfly het pied to a banana fire, and I'm hoping to hit a banana black-eyed Lucy female to keep as a holdback. But who knows? I've not had much luck with the sex ratios this year. But it's all fun, and let's face it, anything from a female banana is a cool clutch, because everything's cool and bananas are cool. If you want to keep up to date on what's going on in the snake room, head over to my Instagram, which is at Ben's Bulls. The link is in the show notes below as well. Moving on to today's guest, he is a keeper that goes under the alias of Viv Visions on Instagram, keeping a multitude of species from Pac-Man frogs to anacondas to monitor lizards. Without further ado, let's please welcome Ken of Viv Visions. Hello, can you hear me?
How are we doing? Good, yeah.
Yes, mate. I am good. Thank you very much for coming on. Lovely to have you here.
No problem at all.
As you can tell from the intro, I apparently can't speak today and keep tripping over my own words. So we'll see how we get on.
Sorry, I didn't worry about it.
Right. So if you haven't listened before, I'd like to start the podcast with a little section called Get to Know. It's a few quick fire questions. Don't really need long answers, just short, snappy answers to get us warmed up a little. So if you're ready, I'll get started.
Yeah, go ahead.
Fantastic. So, first exotic pet?
Burmese python.
Nice. Most unusual species ever kept?
The yellow anaconda, for sure.
Cool. Favourite species in your collection currently?
It would be Asian water monitor.
Brilliant. Money, space, time, legality is no issue. What's a species you'd love to add to the collection?
Cuvier's Dwarf Cayman.
Nice. I also really want one of them. I absolutely love Dwarf Cayman. Brilliant. In your opinion, what is the most underrated exotic pet?
Mammals, reptiles, or anything? Or...
Let's stick with reptiles today.
Underrated, I would say... I think Burmese pythons are underrated. We don't see many of them at all.
Yeah, no, they used to be really popular, and they're definitely not really kept anymore. No. Well, not by a lot of people, anyway. Awesome. And then moving on, we've got the this or that section as well, which is exactly what it says on the tin. So, beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Sun or snow?
Snow.
Vacation or staycation?
Vacation.
Night in or night out?
Night in.
Early bird, night owl, or permanently exhausted pigeon?
Permanently exhausted pigeon.
Yeah, I think that's 90% of people, permanently exhausted pigeons. I can definitely relate. And finally, the most important question of the entire podcast, what is your favourite biscuit?
Oh, it's got to be a bourbon.
Oh, nice. We haven't had a bourbon yet. Haven't had a bourbon. I like a bourbon and a cup of tea. Oh, very nice. Awesome. So that's the get-to-know section. Done and dusted. Obviously, it's just a bit of fun and breaks us down. Breaks the ice. I'm really struggling with speaking today. I don't know what's going on. So Ken, can you please give us all a history lesson? Who is Viv Visions? What was your first exotic sort of encounter, and then how have you evolved into where you are currently as a keeper?
Okay, so starting off with my first exotic encounter, So I went to the pet shop with my dad, reptile shop, sorry, when I was 11 years old, my birthday, to get a bearded dragon. I always wanted reptiles. I didn't get on with cats and dogs as such. And turned up to the shop, and I seen this 11-foot Burmese python, and I pointed at my dad and said, I want that, and then, yeah, I ended up with a Burmese python.
That's yeah. That age as well, that's a... that's cool. To be fair, I don't even know where to start with that. That's it's not a normal beginner reptile, to say.
No, my dad has a background in reptiles anyway. He used to breed snakes anyway, so he obviously helped me along with it. Being obviously the snake's a lot bigger than me, so he helped me out with a lot of things. She died last year, but so she was about 17, 18 foot when she died. So yeah, she was quite big. She was feeding rabbits and stuff, and
yeah,
all my friends used to love her because it was something different.
Yeah, and they are like puppy dog tame normally when they're adults as well.
Yeah, like we used to let her out into the bath and stuff, and she used to free roam the flat when I was a little boy.
So cool. And then so going from a berm, how did you then evolve into where you are today? What's the sort of give us the whole sort of step by step?
So start off with the berm. Then obviously, and the collection was snowballed.
As I do.
At my dad's house, yeah. So we had bearded dragons after because we had got a pair. My dad's like breeding them. They're pretty cool. But it was back when bearded dragons were no morphs. It was just the normal bearded dragons.
Yeah.
And then we had frilled lizards, frilled dragons. They were pretty cool. Went into plum basilisks as well, my father.
Okay.
Obviously, he'd done all the breeding and stuff. I just looked at them because I was a child.
Helped feed them and just enjoyed them.
Being a young kid and stuff. And then after that, my dad, obviously, dad felt ill. So we had to, release some of the collection out.
Yeah.
And then we gave it a break. Still had the Burmese python. Then about till last year. About 10 years after.
Yeah,
moved in with my girlfriend who we're coming to live with now. We got a bearded dragon named Gus, red hypertrans, and then one turned into 20. So it's like different, all different sorts of animals in our house.
Yeah,
this is like a mini zoo here.
Animals almost in every room. That sort of.
Yeah, so we got five downstairs, like the five like we call them the OGs that we have. Whatever. And then we got the reptile room upstairs, which is sort of snakes and stuff upstairs. So we basically separate the snakes from the lizards.
Yeah.
So it's one room for feeding and stuff and just keep them all in one room.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect. It does seem that go on, carry on, sorry.
So yeah, we've got a massive list of animals we can go through later, but obviously I've just recently got into arachnids as well.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, I love arachnids. I think they're quite cool. Obviously, I'm the only one who deals with the arachnids in this house.
Yeah, no, I'm a big arachnid fan. I had a lot of tarantulas and various other arachnids and insects before I moved back into reptile keeping. So I've always got a little soft spot in my heart, especially jumping spiders. I love them. I keep looking and thinking I might add a couple to the collection again.
Yeah, I was looking at jumping spiders. And obviously, I think they're a bit delicate. So I end up losing it or something. And
they are, they're, to be fair, when you get them as well, they are tiny, but they're very characterful and they're not very fast either. So they're really cool little spiders.
I might have to look at some, to be fair.
Yeah, I really like them. So it sounds briefly from there that you've got a menagerie of animals at home. So my next question is, what are you keeping? I'm hoping you've got a list.
Oh, I got the list in front of me just so.
Fantastic.
So we start off with we've got the Melanistic Asian water monitor. I also have a Nile monitor, red hyper-trans-bearded dragon, crested gecko, panther chameleon, two Burmese pythons, a yellow anaconda, four royal pythons, one corn snake, a Pac-Man frog, a blue-eyed white street frog, and then in the arachnids we got Asian forest scorpion, five tarantulas, including a Ferrophagus stomy, the Goliath bird eater.
Yep.
And then we got a giant family centipede.
Oh, cool.
And I also do have some dart frogs as well downstairs. I got a pair of Dendrobates tinctorius azorius, commonly known as the blue dart frogs.
Green ones, blue ones, blue ones.
The blue and black ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite an extensive list.
Yeah, so it's definitely a zoo. I thought we've got quite a lot of animals at home, but we don't have near that variety. So why have you got such a variety? Why, it's not a bad thing at all. Obviously, I would love to have that many, but you tend to find most keepers tend to sort of streamline with either one or two species. Obviously, you have gone reptiles and then done an umbrella and got loads. Yeah. So is there a particular reason why, or
I just love reptiles in general. With obviously the bearded dragon, I like lizards, so then we went to get the chameleon and then it just grew from there with lizards. I like different species. I like learning about all different types of reptiles. You see a lot of stuff on the internet, you can watch a video on how to look after a crested gecko, for instance, but until you actually looked after one, it's a bit hard, do you know what I mean? Because some perspective, it's I don't know. And most of my animals, because the collection's grown so quick, most of them are rescue animals.
Okay.
So obviously we rescue from a place in Swindon.
Right.
If something comes in and obviously we think we can look after it, then we take it in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really good. And there are so many animals that need rescuing or rehoming from rescue centres that if you can have if you've got the space and the time to do it, and I don't know if you're planning on breeding or not, we'll get into that in the future, but obviously with certain animals you don't need to know their history or the genetics because you're not focusing on breeding them, you're going, that animal needs a home, we can give it a home, mm-hmm. and I'd like to keep it. I follow Chris Newman on Facebook, who is, I think he's in charge of the National Welfare for Reptiles Centre. I probably really butchered that, but seeing the amount of animals that he gets in through the doors every single day is madness. And I quite often think that, oh, I wonder if I could give that a home. So fair play to you for actually doing it, because that's really cool. So I'm going to hand pick a few of the species on your list there, because I think we'll be here for many, many hours if we go through all of them. So let's touch on monitors first. So you've got, remind us again of which monitor species you're keeping.
So I'm keeping Asian water monitor and a Nile monitor, two completely different personalities for sure.
Yep.
Whereas Nile monitors are known to be aggressive. They don't. They're very shy. Shy, aggressive. They don't like being, interacted with. Even though I've tried for months and months to even get a tom feed out of it, it just doesn't. I end up getting welched on my arm, and I just leave it alone. the end of the day, like if the animal's not comfortable, we just leave it alone. So
you don't want to force it.
No, exactly. With the Asian water monitor, it's a completely different story. We've we got it from Slithering Reptiles up in Colville.
Right.
And they've done some amazing work before we even picked it up. So when we got it home, it was already socialized to people. By day three, it was already sitting on my shoulder.
Brilliant.
But obviously, we're trying to get the groundwork in early before it gets so big that...
Yeah, because they are both very large species of monitor when they reach their adult size. What sort of size are they both at the moment?
It's a male monitor. They're probably about maybe a foot long each, I would say, with a tail. So they're not big.
Yeah.
But they have the potential to grow another 5 foot.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's definitely some growing room in there.
Yeah.
So at the moment, I imagine they grow quite quickly. I'm not sure. I don't really know much about them, to be honest. Are they?
You don't really notice it. Obviously, when you see them every day, obviously when they interact with one and you interact with the other one every day, you don't really notice it. I mean, if I was to go on holiday for a week, come back, I'd probably notice a difference with that. But they do grow. I've seen a friend who has one. In America, I tracked my Instagram, and he told me that obviously his grew quite to full grown, like 18 months, 2 years.
Yeah, that's mad.
So I am looking to upgrade his enclosure pretty much.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. So what sort of enclosures are they in at the moment? And then what's the sort of plan re-upgrading them? If you need to, they might already be in adult-sized enclosures.
What's
the plan for that?
At the moment, they're in like 5x2x2s. That's the normal one. It's in a 5x2x2 because they're only still small.
Yeah.
The Asian water monitor is in a 5x3 hook tall and 2 deep. So it's got the space and the height at the moment.
Yeah.
Then obviously when they get bigger, depends on obviously the genders and the sex and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to build as much big as I can. That's what I'm going to say. I'm not going to put an exact,
No, that's fair enough. Like obviously it's not something you're doing bang on right this second. So you don't know the exact sizing, but no, it makes perfect sense. I think, obviously, I don't know if I'd be maybe chatting to Paul's monitors or looking for some advice from him. Because, if nothing else, but for lighting, he is like the lighting guru.
We've already been speaking about lighting and stuff. Yeah. Ages ago, before I even brought the water monitor home, we were talking about like what sort of bulb I'm going to be using and stuff. And the bulb he's recommended is actually working quite well because they produce the heat that you need. So
yeah, that's perfect. Like here's a fountain of knowledge.
He's the monitor guru, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely the man you want to be chatting to. So no, that's really cool. Yeah, man, that's mad. Like I really like monitors. I don't know a lot about them. And I definitely know I haven't got room for one that sort of size.
Yeah.
So having the commitment for it to go for two is cool, man. Right. I think an Aki would probably be about as big as I'd go monitor wise.
Yeah, I was thinking I might get an Aki.
Yeah, I know a guy.
Yeah, you have to come and see him sometime for sure when I get the new facility up and running.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'd love to come and I've been to Crocodiles of the World many times. They've got a lace monitor, and that's a big lizard. And I'd love to have the opportunity to sort of interact with something like that. Because you can, like, obviously you can go to a zoo and you can look at them, but there's a difference between looking behind a piece of glass and, like, touching it or tongue-feeding it or just being in the same room where there's nothing separating you. I'll definitely take you up on that offer one day. I don't really know what to ask about the monitors, to be honest. My brain's not really working today. But I do, I'll tell you what, we'll move on from the monitors. Anaconda. So did you say it was a yellow anaconda?
Yes.
And my knowledge tells me that the yellow anaconda is slightly smaller than a green anaconda.
Yeah. So they are the subspecies of, I wouldn't say subspecies, but they're a smaller species of anaconda found in the wetlands of Brazil.
Right. Okay.
Sort of areas in South America. You find them all over South America. And I find that I've interacted with green anacondas before, and it's nothing compared to a yellow anaconda with the sassiness and the spiciness of a yellow anaconda. Like the
Right,
amount
okay.
of times I've been bitten by her,
Yeah.
and she's only like 4 foot long. She's only a baby still.
So
And
how, what sort of size are we talking? Adult, obviously, it varies quite a lot, but well, we.
12 to 14, pushing it
Okay,
maybe.
so then they're not like long. Do they still get really heavy bodied like a green anaconda?
Yeah, like if you go and see videos from people like in America that own them, like James Prince Pets, you'll be able to see what an adult female looks like.
Yeah.
They're probably typically like they
Probably not
probably about
quite as large as
the
Jay's.
size of the male berm, about 10, 12 foot, but they are
Okay.
heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're very strong as well, very strong. Yeah.
So we're talking almost like a big female boa, like a common boa in
Yeah,
size.
yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And if she's like feisty at the moment, are they like berms where like a berm hatchling is generally quite snappy, but they chill out loads as they get older, or are we talking like she is gonna
I always
be
say interaction is key
right,
with
okay.
every animal. If you try to socialize animals as much as you can,
Yeah.
try to end there, even if you get bitten by your animal, everything, try and end on a positive note, put it back in without throwing it away or throwing it, you know what I mean?
That's all well and good saying that when it's 4 foot long, but what happens when it's 13 foot and
No,
takes a
yeah,
chunk out your
well, I
arm?
mean, I work with, obviously, I try to work with the Nile every day, even if it's
Yeah.
not, I'll just put his food and move away. It's interaction. With the yellow anaconda, I try to handle every day, even without wearing gloves. It's just to get used to the touch. Again,
Yeah.
she came from the rescue that I got her from, so she wasn't like a hatchling, and
Yeah.
I picked her up. It was she was already 6 months old when I picked her up, so no one needed even handled her for 6 months.
Right.
So there was no imprint on humans with her.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to work on it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a project that will, well, not, I don't want to use the word project, but I can't think of another word. So it's going to be a project that's going to be a lifetime project as opposed to, oh, I've done it,
Yeah,
managed to tame her in 3 months.
everything and stuff. Yeah, she's fine. She has her off days when she knows it's feeding day, and yeah, I always try
Yeah.
to have boy feed, and then like yeah, sure, I'll end up with a couple of like teeth marks on my hand or
Yeah. Do they have like a good feeding response all the time, or are they a bit on and off?
every time I fed her, I've had her for like what 6 months now, and I feed her every 14 days,
Right.
but I feed her a big meal,
Yeah.
so. Like most people feed them once a week, but I'll feed mine once every 2 weeks just to
Yeah.
keep her thinking. But I won't feed on the same day. So sometimes it could be 15, 16 days, or it could be 11 days. It just
Yeah.
keeps her thinking. But yeah, she's got a brilliant feeding response, and she's quick, put it that
Yeah.
way. She's probably my fastest responsive snake that I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You got to be on your guard for that one then.
Yeah, that's why I wear gloves when I feed. I don't want to get my hand tagged up, right?
Yeah,
But she
no,
never
I
misses. She hasn't
even
missed.
with Royals, I'm using massive tongs. Just like they're not even tongs, they're like forceps. Keep my hands well out of the way because even Royals can come flying out of tub. So like a big
Yeah,
anaconda,
been
but
bit
yeah.
by a royal yet?
Yeah, a few
Yeah,
times.
yeah, 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 yeah. It hurt.
Happens.
I mean, but it's just the initial, the
Yeah.
shock of it.
Yeah, no, it yeah, that's yeah, you are right. It doesn't hurt that much. I think the it's like the force of them hitting you is more of a shock than the actual bite because they strike
Yeah.
with such force. And like a royal is pretty chill compared to like an anaconda, for example.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, there's no warning with the yellow anaconda. She could be like, I'll have the mouse or the rat there, and she'll like slither slowly, and then it's bang.
Yeah.
It's no coil and bang. It's
She
different when it's
keeps you guessing. She's like, oh, he's made me wait for food. Let's see. Make him wait.
The other day, I had to change the water bowl because she passed the food in her water bowl, obviously. And
Yeah.
I took the water bowl out of her viv, walked to the bathroom, and I looked down, and her face was like looking at me through the water bowl. And I was like, okay. So I just put her on the floor, and she was just letting the water cleaners there. I got her hook and put it back in her viv.
Yeah.
I need to pay attention because she always keeps me on my toes. Yeah.
Yeah, I could just see that like she strikes or something, makes you jump, and then you throw shitty water all over yourself.
Yeah, and I don't think my girlfriend would be happy if I was with a carpet on the landing, so
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
yeah.
Like I get that even with the hatchling royals. Like when I'm changing their waters, because they're feeding really well at the moment. they're really snappy. And I know they're going to do it. And I know that they're not going to bite me. They're just like, they just strike. And it still makes me jump. And the amount of times I've like jumped and thrown half a bowl of water somewhere. Luckily, we've got like lino floors, so it's easy to clean up.
Yeah, that's the only problem with really, having it all upstairs is because the carpet.
Yeah. So what made you decide to go for the Anaconda? Because it's obviously not something where you tend to walk into a pet shop and impulse buy it. There has to be a bit of thought behind it.
Yeah, so as I said earlier, obviously the rescue I visit to see him quite regularly. He had it at the rescue, and the person who owned it before never held it for 6 months and nearly released it into the wild.
Blimey.
Yeah. But obviously, there are places like, you know, the rescue I go to, there's other rescues for that specific reason. If you want to hand your animal in, there's no shame in doing so. I don't think there's any shame in handing animals you can't look after. So.
No, I completely agree. I'd much prefer people to hand them in than release them into the wild or take matters into their own hands.
Yeah. We just took her in. The day we brought her home, we thought she would, not take food. She would be like nervous. I put her back in her viv. I took the viv, she was already in. Put her in the viv, within 10 minutes, was eating. Like, I fed her.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so she's eaten ever since. And I had her, so she was like, I think she was about a foot and a half when I had her, and now she's 4 foot, so she's grown really twice the size.
Yeah, she's growing nicely as well. So did you put quite a lot of research into before you got the Anaconda, or was it a sort of that it needs a home, we'll take it and sort of learn as we go?
So I obviously inquired about it 2 weeks before I picked it up. So then I already donated to have it. And then I had 2 weeks to, you know, sort the viv out and stuff. But luckily, he already helped me out with the viv. So then for 2 weeks, I was just researching, like, what they eat. Obviously, they eat mice and rodents and stuff. But they also eat, like, fish as well in the wild.
Okay.
So obviously, when they're in the rivers and stuff, they eat fish, they eat rodents, they eat small mammals, birds.
Yeah.
So they like quite like quail, as I found, but it's obviously quite expensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I do vary all the animals. I get varied diets. Like if I can,
that's cool. That's a good way to do it.
But yeah, so I did my research and then brought her home.
Then the real learning sort of starts then, doesn't it?
Yeah, you can learn, like I said, learn about everything on the internet tenfold. You could be there for months researching things, yeah. But then you bring it home and then it's like you're learning as you're doing it.
Definitely. And like, you can read 1,000 things on the internet and they'll all be slightly different, and until you actually start keeping, like, and you have it in front of you and you're adjusting the temperatures and you're seeing how that specific animal responds, it's all slightly different anyway. I think I'm not advising anyone that is listening to just go and buy an anaconda.
No, definitely not. Do not do that.
or any animal for that fact. But at the same time, there's only so much you can learn just from reading before you need to go and do and then learn as you're doing.
Well, my advice would be for something like that, like an anaconda, or I'm gonna say retic as well, because they're like, you know, they have you on your toes as well, retic pythons.
Big animals in general.
If you have any questions and such, find someone on the internet, like on Instagram, if you follow them, like myself. If you ever want to ask me any questions, just message me, I'll give you advice.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're the same mindset as me, that you'd prefer, even if you don't know the answer, you'd prefer someone to reach out. And if you can't help them, you can point them in the direction of someone that might be able to.
Exactly. We're all here to help each other. So
yeah, no, exactly. Like I said on the episode with Sal from Cryptic Condros, we've got to build a nice, happy community where people are happy to help each other. So reach out and ask those questions.
Big up Sal, man. He's a legend, yeah.
He's a good lad. He's just come back from America as well. So I'm
well. Yeah, I'm pretty jealous.
Yeah, I'm really jealous. I'll tell you what is your favourite species in your collection that we haven't already gone over? So not the monitors or not the anaconda.
Okay. I'm going to go for inverts. My favourite invert is my centipede.
Yeah.
Again, that keeps me on my toes.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you've got quite a lot of things actually that like to keep you on your toes. Like, not necessarily are like life threateningly dangerous, but Centipedes pack a punch, and they're—I tell you—they're escape artists as well.
Yeah. So I've got. I purposely made. It's a 30-30, 30-30, 60 tall.
Yeah.
It's glass put together with a vent, with a metal vent. It's like a grill vent.
Yeah. So it can't bite through it.
So it can't bite through it, and then a deep layer subject, but it's a, like a bit further down from the grill, so it cross ventilates, obviously. And I just drop food in. I don't even attempt to tongue feed it. I just drop food in. It's fun to watch it chase it as well.
Is it quite an active species as well? It's not something I've ever kept.
They're more nocturnal than diurnal. They like to come out at night. So obviously I'm up till like, you know, 11 o'clock at night feeding all my spiders and stuff. Because you know, like even arachnids.
Yeah.
They wake up till hours in the morning and then you're just, feeding and then. But yeah,
that's cool. And then, what sort of things are you feeding this centipede? I presume a mixed diet.
Yeah, so I offer locusts, big black crickets.
Yeah,
dubia roaches. I got a load of males in colonies, so I just feed off my males.
Yeah,
good source of protein for your animals, dubia roaches. Moria worms. No.
So sort of like everything on the shelf then, so to speak.
Yeah. I'm going to try and breed my own feeders because, you know, having all these animals, it does get quite pricey with food.
It really does. So if anyone is breeding insects and stuff and want to hit me up and sponsor the podcast, slide into my DMs because everything's well expensive.
yeah, hit me up too, do a deal.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I saw you were working with, or you were promoting, I can't remember the name of the place now.
Like Farm Feeds.
Are they the ones doing the calcium worms, the black fly larvae? Yes.
Yeah, they're really, really good. All my animals love them. I even tried some of the spiders and stuff. They love them. So, yeah, they're good source of protein for animals.
No, they are good. I've used them a few times. The only thing I find with them is if you keep them too warm, they turn to flies really, really quickly.
And you can feed those flies to your chameleon.
Yeah, I know. I do. I was going to say, and it's brilliant watching them fly around, and he like smashes them out of the air. But they also, when I open the pot, they escape, and my wife hates it.
Yeah, my chameleon doesn't shoot his tongue. He's too lazy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if anyone sees my Instagram, you'll know how lazy my chameleon is. He'll come to the front and back to breeze, and he'll wait for the tongs to come in. Like he doesn't shoot.
Yeah, his mine's getting clever now. So I've got a 6 foot by 3 foot by 2 foot, like 6 foot tall, 3 foot by 2 foot deep. It was a bird cage that I converted into cut the front off it, put a screen door on it, and then corrects the whole thing. So it's massive. And he, when you open it, he like almost runs to like, he knows this is the spot he's going to feed me. And you look at him like, oh, he's really tame. He wants to come out. So you know, if you pick him up, he will bite you and take chunks out of your hand, and he's horrible, but he's cool to look at.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Mine's been grumpy for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and you don't really notice when they start shedding, do you? And then like, next thing you know, they start popping, and look at why he's just grumpy. And then like this, 3 years ago, when I was there, and all his skin started peeling off, I was like, oh, now I know why he's been grumpy.
Yeah. So yours is you've got panther or panthers?
Blue bar panther. I do want to. Get some more because they are really majestic animals, I believe.
Yeah.
They are really, really pretty. So,
we've got a Yemen at the moment, but I think we have decided that once he passes away, we're going to go for a panther next. We're looking at nosy bees.
Yes. Yeah. So mine's an Ambanja.
Sorry, that's my dog's gone mental.
That's all right. My dog went over the door. It's fine.
I love a chameleon. They are really cool, but mine, it's horrible. My dog's barking. Absolutely threw me then. I've completely lost my train of thought. There's foxes. The foxes have got a den on the other side of the fence, and in the evenings, the babies are out at the moment, and the dogs are running up and down the fence trying to get to them. Which it's great. My neighbours love it, I'm sure. you mentioned... wanting to possibly add some more chameleons in the future. So with such a large collection of animals, Are there any plans to breed in the near future or in the far future? Is it something, or are you just happy keeping a selection?
At the moment, I'm happy keeping a selection. Well, the big selection of animals I have.
Yeah.
Maybe when, you know, if we ever do move, we've got a bigger space for things. Like, maybe we can get multiples of everything and try breeding. But at the moment, it's not viable. But, you know, it's not fair to have, you know, all these animals. Like, I could have a whole room full of chameleons or a whole room full of pool pythons. Don't knock some people doing it, because, you know, some of the people, and they produce some brilliant stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I ain't got the time at the moment, you know, working.
Each to their own as well. Like, I think it's like, you don't have to, like, I've got my mainly royals, but we have got tortoises, chameleons, cresties, lab geckos as well. But when I was first started keeping, when I was 13 to 17, 18, I didn't really, I bred some royals and that was it. But most of my animals were, the collection was almost, it was similar to yours, not to this like scale of animals, but I had like rainbow boas, corn snakes, bearded dragons, like a bit of everything. And I really enjoyed it.
Rainbow boa.
Yeah, like the bit of the rainbow boas I call my wife really wants, a Brazilian rainbow boa. But we haven't got the space for it at the moment. But if you like, if you're not planning on breeding or not planning on breeding for a while, fair play, get stuck in, like experience all the different varieties of animals. Because even if their like husbandry is different for each species, you're going to learn like different things that you can implement into other animals, like into the way you're keeping other things. I think it's good. Like, you don't have to be breeding 30 royal clutches a year or like producing top tier monitor lizards or breeding anything. Like, you can just be a keeper, and that's fine. And I think there's too much pressure on people nowadays to breed as well.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that as well. Like, did you go to IHS this year?
No, I haven't been to any of the IHS this year. I am going to the ARC show in November.
I am going to try and get tickets for that. I don't know if it's still sold out, but
I think there's a few left, but I would drop Marv an email.
Yeah, I'm going to do that today. So obviously when you went on to IHS, it was the royal show. Like, every other table was royals. And I did want to breed royals at some point. I'm not going to say when, but we'll go into that show and you see new royals and the royals, and then you don't see much else. And it puts you off as trying to do something you want to breed.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I don't know. With the breeding side of things, I'm just happy to keep the animals I've got for now.
Yeah.
Because obviously I got like 20 odd mouths to feed, and then obviously if I got to feed their offspring as well, it's just enjoyment of all.
Yeah, it's mad. So I've got 14 baby hatching royals at the moment, a couple of cresty hatchings as well. And like the royals that aren't feeding, I'm offering food every 4 days to try and get them feeding. And then the ones that are eating are getting fed every 5 days at the moment as hatchlings. And just trying to keep on top of that, as well as looking after all the rest of the animals. And like, yeah, it's mad. And obviously I've got kids and dogs as well.
Yeah.
It takes up a lot of time. Like, I'm probably spending 2-3 hours in the evening at the moment, sorting out snakes, sorting out cresties, cleaning everything. But let's face it, that's why we do it. I love it. Doing that, I'm sat watching telly. So,
yeah, that's what I mean. If I'm not doing all this, I'd be sat in a pub wasting my money somewhere else. So,
yeah, exactly.
I enjoy the hobby. I enjoy learning about all different species and stuff, learning husbandry, trying to implement it with other people, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to touch on the shows as well. Like, I know I spoke about it in the last episode, and I'm not sponsored to be saying it or anything. But if you have been to the IHS show, or even if you haven't, but you don't want to go to a reptile show where there's loads, or like you say, it's just tables and tables of royals, there are still tickets left for the ARC show. Go and check it out, because me and Marv and Jake covered it on the last episode. They have deliberately limited the amount of royals that are, like, royal sellers that are there, and they're trying to make it. There's 50, I think they said there's 50 tables, and I think they've limited it to either 15 or 20 people that are selling royals. So that means there's at least 30 tables that are something else.
Yeah. And this is why we're going to that one, because we want to go to things like the future planning of things.
Yeah, yeah, like, definitely. Like, you see cool stuff that you might not necessarily see.
Yeah, so I can get my words out then. But the future of X-Men, like Marvel is doing a very, very good job in promoting the arc. I am looking forward to the show where I can get down there for sure.
But I would also like to add that I am selling Royals there. And I'll be showing off some stuff that's holdbacks as well. So come and find me, because although you don't want to see Royals, you want to see my Royals.
Yeah, we will definitely be there.
So with no immediate breeding plans, where do you sort of see yourself as a keeper this time next year and then in 5 years and 10 years' time?
I think we're in the next year. We're going to be exactly the same as we are.
Yeah.
Maybe with a few more cool species. Obviously, I'm not going to release too much yet because I don't know what I'm actually getting yet.
Yeah.
Within 5 years, I want to be involved in education for kids.
Cool.
I think they need to be introduced into the hobby as well. Not to learn and like animals as well. Not be scared of them. That's what I'm trying to bring across.
No, I agree. Before we go into 10 years, we'll touch on that, because I think the education is really important. Like when I was growing up, we had like Steve Irwin on the telly, and then obviously he passed away and a few years later, I don't know how many years later, like Steve Backshall did Deadly 60. So when I was growing up, there was always some sort of animal content on the telly.
Yeah.
Nowadays, yeah. Don't get me wrong, I don't tend to watch kids' TV, but I have got a daughter who's 12, and I don't think there's ever any animal-related TV on. The only TV that is animal-related now, unless you actively hunt for it, is like David Attenborough's Blue Planet or whatever David Attenborough series is at the time.
Yeah, I want to be involved, like going to like schools. I want to help out with communities who, you know, don't get a chance to see such things. And I think this is the way we want to go forward with things.
No, I think that's brilliant. And with the collection you've got as well, it makes that, like, I couldn't do it. Like, I could go, here's a royal, here's a tortoise, here's a lizard. That's it.
Yeah.
Whereas you can go and take 10 different species. And even if the kids don't handle them all, they can go, oh, Mum, I saw a tarantula, or I saw this massive centipede, or we touched a frog, or, like, all of us held a massive snake together. And
yeah.
If you can inspire the next generation, like even if you don't inspire all of them, if you say you got a class, like a group of 30 kids and two of them go home and are like,
there's
two
more people to the hobby.
Exactly. And it raises, not necessarily raises awareness, but if you can educate people, it stops it. It stops the like demonization, if that's a word, of like especially snakes. Like you see on the news, I probably see on the news once a week, if not more, like python escaped in a park somewhere, or like this person's snake lied down next to them and was sizing them up. And like I know it's a load of rubbish, and like my reptile friends know it's a load of rubbish, but that's not even 1% of the population.
I think for the kids of today and the future, they need to be learning about all sorts of animals, not just reptiles, because, like, I don't know really just what I'm going to say here, but some people do think, because they've been brought up with their parents are old school, they don't like reptiles, they don't like all these things, do you know what I mean? Or, like, they don't like spiders.
Yeah.
But then, so like when I was a young child, I wasn't allowed a pet tarantula when I was younger.
Yeah, because my mum wouldn't let me. She hates spiders.
So I had a bearded dragon when I was really young at my mum's house. That was probably as far as it got, and then it was a dog. But I think all children should be educated.
I don't think you should stop at children. I think people need to be educated in general.
Everyone in general should be educated, I think.
Yeah, like look at the XL bullies, for example. Like that's going on at the moment.
Yeah, there's
99% of people. I'm gonna go down there. I don't care if you're in the comments telling me I'm wrong. You're all wrong. Shut up. So, I know this is a sort of reptile chat, but whilst we're touching on people being educated, like the XL bully thing is ridiculous, in my opinion. Like, all of us, clearly not all of us, because some people are deciding that they're going to ban them, but we know it's not the dog, it's the owner. And you can't, I don't see how they can possibly prosecute every single dog. Well, I know they're going to, and there's nothing me saying we'll do about it. But I just wish that if like you say, if more people were educated, they would know, oh, hang on a minute, it's not the fact that the, it's not that dog, it's the idiot that's on the end of the lead. Like,
I'm gonna say one thing, and I'm gonna throw me one thing.
Yeah, yeah. We will.
They find these big dogs that are, you know, you see them, and most of them are really friendly.
Yeah.
But if you go to, you know, your auntie's house or your nan's house, and they got a chihuahua, wants to bite your face off.
Yep.
And I just, yeah.
Sorry. I say I've been bitten by three dogs in my life. I've been bitten by two Jack Russells and a Dachshund. Right. I've got a mate that's got two XL bullies. I've got friends that have got, I've got a Husky Cross. I've got friends that have got sled dogs. I've got German Shepherds, like all of the big scary dogs, and they are all lovely. And it's always, like you say, it's always the little ones that are horrible. No, don't get me wrong. Not all little dogs are horrible.
No, of course not.
If you were to line up, like if I was to go and get 100 pet owners from the area that I live in, I can almost guarantee it's the little dogs that would be snapping my fingers if I was trying to like stay alive.
Yeah,
and it's, I think it's really unfortunate. They are, the bigger dogs are being prosecuted. But anyway, let's move on from that because I don't want to upset anyone. If you are listening and you disagree with me, you're wrong. So no.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Yeah. So 5 years' time, hopefully, educating kids, and hopefully those kids will be going home and educating their parents.
Not just kids; it could be anyone, no, really. Yeah. Then. You know, yeah,
that's cool, man. Like, that's something I'd love to do. And then 10 years time, same again, but better and bigger.
10 years time, I plan to open like a facility.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, not like Brian Barjack scale, but maybe something
like a reptarium type thing, but smaller.
Yeah, so people can come and see the animals, because I don't want to be in a situation where, you know, you've got to take. For instance, if I did manage to get my water monitor tame, I don't want to be taking it in the car to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Rather than come and visit a facility, that's what the plan is.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like the reptarium, obviously, there's a lot going on with Brian Barjack at the moment, but the reptarium is incredible. And I think, or not I think, but I know that there'll be a lot better understanding of animals, or reptiles, let's say, and it's got some, if there were more places like that. Oh, my camera's gone. Can you still hear me?
I can still hear you, yeah. Yeah, there we go.
Cool. My internet's being weird at the moment. It keeps dropping out. But yeah, if there was more opportunities for people to come in face-to-face, like be able to touch or see up close all of these animals, interact with them, it would massively help the community, the reptile hobby, and just animal keepers in general.
Yes, for sure. Yes. Obviously, you go to some places like this. I think it was the Cotswold Wildlife Park.
Yeah.
Have you ever been there before?
I haven't. I know that it's like 20 minutes, if that, from Crocodiles of the World, because last time I went to Crocodiles of the World, I was going to go to both, and I didn't in the end. But I have seen it. I know a few people that have been.
So we went there, and the reptile house there is fantastic.
Okay.
But again, like, there's no interactions, there's no talks and stuff, so they don't even, like... This is what the plan is. I want to provide a service where everyone can learn about, like, obviously the various species that we have.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like you say, like reptile houses at zoos, like, they normally have a cool selection of animals, but there's never anyone in there to talk to. Like, no. you go in, like, we went to Whipsnade this year, and they had a small selection. I think they are in the process of building a new reptile house, but they had what was advertised as a reptile house open. It was mainly fish and butterflies, and they had a few snakes, and I don't think they had any lizards at all, and all you were reading was like an A4 sheet stuck on the side of the glass. Like, whereas I went to the giraffe enclosure and there were four keepers, and I could talk to them about giraffes forever. And I understand that most people probably more interested in the bigger animals, but like, even if there was like a keeper in there, I don't know if it was an off day or they were like in the loo, or it's just my experience, but like, I know, especially as a child, you have so many questions going through your head, like, especially when you're at a zoo, because obviously it's high, it's exciting, there's lots of cool stuff going on, and you want to be able to say to the keeper, that's a cool whatever, where does it live, what does it eat? Because although the child or adult or whoever can read that information off the piece of paper on the stuck on the glass, you'll get a much better interaction, even if not with the animal, but with speaking to the keeper. Like, because, like, say, I could say, oh, it says on there it eats rodents. or I could go and have a word with the keeper and he'll go, oh yeah, well, we feed it mice, rats, quail, this, that, yeah, and whatever. And you get a much better knowledge, and yeah, you probably remember, you're probably more likely to remember it than going, oh yeah, I've read that, but I mean, you know what it is.
Yeah. So, I'm more susceptible to remember things if someone talks to me about them.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't read things. If I read a piece of A4 paper and I think I'll never remember it. So.
Yeah, like, I get the Exotic Keepers magazine every month. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, it's a really, really good magazine, but I mainly look at the pictures because I read the articles, and some of the articles are really well written and they are interesting, but my brain just doesn't seem to retain the information. But the pictures are really good. So if nothing else, and you want to go and check it out, get some cool pictures.
If
they are listening to this, I'm really sorry, but we do like the magazine. It's really good. I wouldn't keep paying for it if I didn't like it.
I do like that magazine. Some good stuff in there as well.
Yeah, no, it's really good. We won't go into it. They're not sponsoring this podcast at all. I like it. Shout out the things you like, innit? Talking of shouting out the things you like, who inspires you in the hobby? What particular places are you looking to find your sort of reptile content? Are we talking YouTube, Instagram, podcasts? Give us some insights.
Well, for myself?
For yourself, yeah.
So I get my inspiration from Instagram. Got a few good friends in the hobby and on Instagram. So obviously Ridley Reptiles, quite helpful. He's been very helpful to me. Paul's been very helpful to me, Paul's Monitors. I also talked to someone called Dragon Pit Reptiles. They keep a lot of cool species, very cool, and they're very good friends of mine. And there's obviously other general accounts I follow. Oh, sorry, Sal from Cryptic Chondros.
Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot about you, my guy. But yeah.
It's all right, to be fair. There's always, it's so hard when you're put on the spot to remember everyone.
They're all very helpful, for sure.
Yeah, and Sal, Ridley Reptiles, and Paul have all been on the podcast. So go back and listen to those episodes as well because they're worth a listen.
Yeah.
And then are you? Is it just Instagram? Were you on Facebook? Are you looking at like YouTube? Like, is there anybody on YouTube you're particularly interested in?
On YouTube, I watch a lot of Nerd. So Kevin McCrawley, Nerd, obviously got like monitors and stuff. Watch a bit of Brian Bartek now and again when he posts a video. Obviously, trying to support his channel and stuff. But yeah, other than that, I just keep to my Instagram, scrolling through, finding something cool.
I'm quite happy sat on the sofa scrolling through Instagram. Just kind of, oh, look at that, that's cool. We've been going for nearly an hour, so I am going to start wrapping it up because we like to try and keep it around the hour mark. Before we wrap up, the final question I would like to ask you is the Reptichat Hall of Fame. So if you have listened previously, it used to be the Reptichat Hall of Fame and Hall of Shame. I dropped the Hall of Shame because I don't want to be bad-mouthing anybody particularly. So, or not anybody, but anything. So we're just going to finish on a point. I'm really sorry. You can tell me afterwards if you want to slag
something. So
it's just the Reptichat Hall of Fame. It is, how can we describe it? It's like walking into the front of probably the coolest museum in the world. And as you walk through, there are pedestals left and right of you, each of which has an item or a piece of advice or something reptile related that a previous podcast guest has left. As you're walking through the Hall of Fame, as you can see, I'm rambling today, to be honest. There's an empty pedestal at the end of the Hall of Fame, and this is where you can add your item or piece of advice or other reptile related thing to the Reptichat Hall of Fame. So what would you like to add to the Hall of Fame today, please?
Halogen bulbs, for sure.
Awesome. Like, that was easy. Like, some people, I'm an R for ages. And don't get me wrong, all the entries I've had have been really good, but that is a man that knows what he's putting in there. Halogen bulbs, and I agree, they're really good. I think for 90% of animals that require heat, they are the way to go.
Yeah.
And I'm sure most people would agree.
Yeah, halogen bulbs are the way forward now.
Yeah, which is it's just surprising, actually, because they're banning them, but unless they're for reptiles.
Yeah.
Which is really annoying because I used to love going to Wilkinson's and buying them really cheap. And now I have to buy the expensive. Well, I can't even go to Wilkinson's anymore. But
now you've got to pay your own to make a good bulb. But yeah,
exactly.
That's the downside. We have really good bulbs. Sure.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely. Yeah. Halogen bulbs, top tier. There we go. That is the Reptichat Hall of Fame. Right. Ken, thank you very much for coming on. Before we disappear, plug yourself. So, where can people find you if they want to?
So we are Bird Visions. We are on Instagram, TikTok, soon to be YouTube. we're going to start our own podcast soon, yet to be confirmed. Trying to move over to Facebook as well. Going to try and link the Instagram and Facebook together. And that's about it. Obviously, anyone has any questions, anything about any species that I keep, please message me. I'll give you the best advice I can. And if I don't know the right answer, I'll pass it on to someone else that knows the answer.
Perfect. Perfect. That's all we can ask. In fact, that should be a piece of advice for everyone as well. Like, reach out, help everybody else, and just be kind.
Be kind. Exactly. For sure.
Awesome. Right. Thank you very much, man. I'm going to say goodbye and I'm going to finish up the podcast. It's been a really, really good episode. I've loved chatting to you, and I'm sure we will catch up again very, very soon.
No problem. So
until next time, dude. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wow. Well, if you are still listening, thank you very much. I really, really enjoyed that chat. It was a really good one. We covered some, I'm not going to say hard-hitting topics, but if you want to take the XL Body chat as a hard-hitting topic, then get in my comments, because I don't care what you think. If you are, I'm sorry, I don't know what's wrong with me today. If you are listening and you still haven't subscribed or followed or whatever the option is on the platform you're listening to, please follow, like, subscribe, all that sort of stuff, because it's free features and it really, really helps the podcast. You can also drop a comment below. I think if on Spotify, you can also leave like a review, or there's like a Q&A section on every episode. Chuck a comment on there. I'll read everything that gets posted, and I am eternally grateful, as it all really, really helps. If you do want to support the podcast a little bit more than a like, comment, or a follow, in the link, top link below, is the Patreon page, which I mentioned at the top of the show. So come and join the Reptile Squad today. Save yourself 10% on all my Morph Market stuff, and there will be further cool stuff in the future. Probably some stickers, maybe some merch. Not really sure. And I will probably, and oh, I'll definitely announce guests earlier on there, and yeah, some other cool stuff as well that will evolve as the Reptile Squad devolves itself. That's enough of that for today. I am really struggling with words today. Not really sure what's going on, but I hope you guys have all enjoyed the episode. If you want to keep up to date with what's going on with me personally, well, my reptile keeping personal page sort of thing, and the podcast, go and check out the Instagrams. The @s are @ Ben's Balls and @ ReptiChat. They are both in the show notes below, and they're on the screen if you're watching as well. So that is all for today. Thank you very much. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And I will catch up with you guys on the next episode very, very soon. See you later.